Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, everyone. I'm Lori Davis, and you're listening to The Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio and TGIF. Thank goodness it's Friday. It's been a busy week, lots of fantastic interviews. And today I'm delighted to welcome back Joan Wakeland. If you've been listening, you'll know that I interviewed Joan a few weeks back, and we had a few interruptions and a few technical difficulties, so we're back here today to redo the interview, and I believe Joan has invited a friend. So welcome to the show, Joan.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me on this special day of yours. Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. Yes, I cannot believe it. Married late in life and able to plug in 27 years. That's pretty amazing.
You got your soulmate. I could only do seven.
Oh, well, I'd kissed a few frogs before I found Ron, believe me. Yeah, so how are things in sunny California? But beautiful weather today?
Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful day. And I'm so excited to be on again, and hopefully we have no challenges today.
That's amazing. Great, great. For sure. Well, today we're going to talk about your book. We're going to talk about your life, your story, whatever it is we want to share. We've had so many chats now, I just feel like we're new best friends, and over coffee every chance we get, correct?
Yes, I feel as if I'm your family, you know, a sister that I just found. It's great. And, you know, today I'm going to share about relationships when we talk, because it's just so important how you can find one friend and how that one friend can link you to so many other friends. And sometimes you did not know that this person was a friend of a friend, you know, because I met a gal by the name of Cheryl, and I think probably she's the one that may be on the line today. And Cheryl knew somebody, and I knew that person, but I didn't know Cheryl knew that person. So it's just so important to be able to, what should I say, operate like you should every day, because you never know who knows you. So you should be on your guard every day and be nice, because someone else knows you and they don't want to hear bad things about you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, so if it was not for Robbie,
yes,
I would not have met you, you know.
I know.
If it was not for Robbie Mata, I would not have been in contact with you. So it's a network coming together and becoming family.
Yes, that is correct. And if it had been for Carl Wilson, I probably would not have met Robbie.
Wow.
I know. How great is that? Well, they used to say that we were separated, 6 degrees of separation, but now I think we're just only 2 clicks away. What do you think?
That's true. That's true. With the internet,
with technology,
you're probably just 1 click away.
Yes. Yes. Well, I see perhaps Cheryl has arrived. Is that Cheryl that has just joined us?
Yes, it is.
Good morning.
Hi, Laurie. Hi, Joni.
Hi, Cheryl. Good to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me, Cheryl.
Yeah, thanks for letting me know. I saw that and put it on my put my timer on right away so I wouldn't forget.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to have you on the show, Cheryl, and then Joan can come and be your guest.
There you go.
Yeah, I suggested that to her. Yeah.
Well, we were just talking about relationships and connections and how we meet people. And I have a special story around that that I'd like to start off with and then over to you, Joan. I have another good friend. Her name is Lynn. And she's probably our number one fan. She's probably listening to the show right now. She hardly ever misses. And I met her through another friend who said, listen, I'm taking this workshop and I've met this woman, Lori Davis, and you really need to meet her, Lynn. And Lynn traveled a couple of hours one way. I traveled a couple and we hooked up for lunch. And that was in 2009. And lo and behold, we both ended up sort of semi-retiring, I guess, and her husband retiring, living in this very small community that I'm in. What are the chances of that? And he has been such a support all along the way, personally and professionally. And as a matter of fact, it's our anniversary today, but she and her husband always host this fantastic dinner for Ron and I, so we'll be going over there tomorrow night. So people are so important not to blow people off. You know what I mean, ladies, by that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't know, how they're going to be for you down the road when you need help. And so anyway, well, let's go over to you, my guest today, Joan Wakeland, author, speaker, just launched her best-selling book called Run for Freedom. So I'm just going to ask Joan to share a little bit about her story first, and then Cheryl can jump in at any time and add her two cents worth. So we'll just have, like, we're having coffee, girls, okay?
Oh, that would be wonderful. Great.
Okay. So over to you, Joan. Who is Joan Wakeland? Who is Joan Wakeland?
She is a simple little girl, a humble girl, a little girl that's grateful for the many blessings that has been bestowed on her. I came to this country with a small amount of money, less than $100, I would say, because at that time when I was leaving Jamaica, we were told that we could only get $50, U.S. dollars that was. So I came here with a six-year-old boy. And why did I come? Why did I leave a beautiful, beautiful country like Jamaica? Well, actually, it's a beautiful island. I just really miss it for what it offered. However, there are times when you have to make a decision about your life. And you may not have a long time to plan it because, you know, the end of the day, it's your God that's in control. Well, one night when I was in my pharmacy, someone came to me and he said, you're on the hit list. They're planning to come and rob you. And usually in those days when you were robbed, you probably would not be alive to identify
right.
who came in. You probably may have, like I met a woman who had acid thrown on her. And regrettably, those people who did that did not get a lot of money. It's like under $50 that they got, but they threw acid in her face and left her there. And so I met this woman in America when she came up from Jamaica looking for help, and I was at the time with Kiwanis Group, and she was actually visiting the Lions. They helped her to get surgery that was necessary. So that's how I had to make my mind up. I had to make it fast. I had a six-year-old boy, and I did not want my grandparents. I am a selfish woman when it comes to my child. I think that I, or all mothers, after we've gone through childbirth, we're really entitled to taking care of our child. Yes, I know that there are some mothers that abandon their child. They don't know the joy that comes with rearing a child. So that's when I made up my mind that I would come to America. I first thought about Canada, but in March when I went there, it was so cold, and my aunt had mistakenly locked the keys in the car, and so it was not a nice visit there in Canada in March. So I chose to come to California, where it was similar weather to Jamaica, and I am grateful that I came here because I met people that I knew. But how did I get to California? I first went to New Jersey and I stayed there, my husband's sister, and then I called my good friend in California and he said, I can't do anything for you while you're over there, just come over to California and I can help you better. Well, how could he help me better? Being a pharmacist in my country, he was a doctor there at one point, and he had patients that were sent to me to fill their prescriptions. And I gave good service. I remember there was a little boy that didn't want to eat, and we'd have a concoction for him. And he ate, but he wouldn't eat until Aunt Joan came to feed him. And that boy now, we have to lock the refrigerator door from him because he's eating. He's so big, he's eating so much. So that was my first footstep in America.
Wow. That's, you know, I just can't even imagine. I moved from one side of Canada to the other, and we didn't have to leave our country. I'm still in my own country. I'm 3,000 miles away from my homeland, but I'm still in the same country.
Well, the thing about it, people don't understand what they have in America. I think most of Americans really need to travel. They need to see how other people manage with much less.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I can tell you when I came in first, I saw water bottles in my fridge because I didn't have the money to buy food. And mm-hmm. my little boy was playing outside with another child. It was near Christmas, and he told that child that mommy didn't have anything as a toy for him at Christmas. And that little boy ran in and he told his mother. Well, his mother was a pastor's wife. That evening, she dumped on my front door 2 black trash bags. They had more toys than we could ever use. But the thing about it, people were not giving the best. They gave all the broken toys. And one piece that was in there was a ceramic piece. It was a woman. And she looked like Venus of Milo. So I took that piece. We went to a shop and threw a golden glaze over it. I still have that piece because it reminds me of the humble beginnings that we had. It also reminds me that when I'm giving, I should not give the worst. I shouldn't give something that I'll have to eventually just put in the trash can. If you're a giver, you should give with joy because we cannot outgive God. And so when we give something that's nice, something nice comes back to us. It's called karma.
Mm-hmm.
And what was also good, though, with that woman, she gave me not only toys, but she gave me canned food. And that was like December of 1979.
Wow.
By April of 1980, I got a job. The canned mm-hmm. foods served me from December to April. I had someone else who gave me to live. And she said, you can stay here until you get a job, then you can start paying me back. I have a home that I have for my mother, and I would let you stay there until we need it. Just pay me back when you have a job. And that lady was a doctor's wife. And so I can say I got help. So there are angels walking around that will help you. But we have to pray. I learned to pray so much because when I was at my island home, I didn't need anything. Everything was given to me, and I was helping people. I remember on the Saturday mornings, you would have people who would come to me, and I'd give them money so they could go and buy meat. I remember giving children the baby food that's in can. I would prefer like I told them, to give you, then you steal from me. And so it was planting the seed and having to reap them years later. But when I planted the seed, I didn't know I would be going into a situation like this, where I would be humbled and need help.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice to a lot of people who may be listening is, when you give cheerfully, because you never know what will happen down the road to you. Life is not always going to be a bed of roses. You're going to get some cactuses thrown your way, and you won't have to sit on those cactuses long if you were a giver and a believer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like that story, Aesop's fable, The Lion and the Mouse. And the lion was in the jungle and he saw this little mouse scurry by and put his paw on his tail and he was going to eat the mouse. And the mouse said, please, please, don't eat me, don't eat me. And so then he let the mouse go. And sometime later, the lion ended up caught inside of a net hung from a tree. And who should come by but that little mouse who said, I can save you, I can save you. And he started chewing on the net and freed the lion. So you're absolutely correct. We don't know when we might need something from someone. What do you have to say about that, Cheryl? Giving and receiving.
Sorry, I had to get off mute first. I absolutely believe in that. I like to think that Joni and I were kind of brought up by the same father, except they had different names, because when we talk about, you know, my father said this or my father said that, we kind of go, really? My dad said the same thing. And they would always emphasize generosity to the people around you. I remember one of the things, don't know about you, but my father always said, because he grew up very poor, as they called it, a little barefoot boy in the country. And he would talk about how he had been helped by a teacher in his village. And that's how he was able to grow up and get a good education and so forth. And so he always felt a great obligation to pay it forward, to give something back to his community.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe very much in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it took a homeless person to teach me that giving and receiving must be perfectly balanced in order for it all to work. So many of us are givers, but sometimes in my world it was difficult for me to receive anything. And it took a homeless person offering me change out of his cup to teach me that. Because when I refused to take anything from him, the look on his face was so devastating. I'll remember it until I leave here. It was like I had just cut off both of his arms because I was unable to receive. My husband, who's older than I am, about 8 years, he said to me, why didn't you just take a dime? Do you realize that when somebody wants to give you something, they're giving it to you because it gives them joy to give? And so who are we to turn our back on that or say things like, well, you shouldn't have spent all that money on me. Oh, you didn't have that. And what he explained to me, what we're really doing is stealing other people's joy in giving when we don't receive graciously.
That's the truth.
That is so true.
Isn't it?
That is the truth.
So when somebody wants to support me, yes. Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
No, you go ahead. You continue your thought.
No, that's okay. Yeah, no, that's okay. It's just that I have to be very careful because there's that low self-worth piece of me that wants to think that I can do everything by myself.
It's the reason you do that, Laurie, and I think both myself and Cheryl can identify with that, is that sometimes when you delegate what you need to be done, the person who you delegated to and you thought that they would carry it all through, they fall down and they don't carry through. And you yeah. have not the work that you would expect from that person. So you say, okay, I'll just do it myself. And
right.
the only way people can really learn is you have to give them something to do. And then you have to say, well, how could you do that better? I mean, this is not exactly what I want. Because if we don't give constructive criticisms to people who want to uplift themselves, then they will always stay in that state thinking that they're perfect. And mm-hmm. I can tell you this. When I came to America, I had no thought that I would be taking advice from someone when it came to business. I thought mm-hmm. because I was in business that, you know, I was equipped to handle myself. And then I worked for a pharmaceutical company. Those are the these are the companies that gave me the, what should I say, the humbleness to accept criticism, because then was the first time I was having a boss. No, so you move from yourself being a boss, and now you're being bossed, and now you're shown your shortcomings,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you have to take it. So I learned from corporate America how to really structure criticism. It's not that you come down and you say to the person, oh, this is no good, whatever. First, you tell the person that, oh, this is beautiful. However, what could you have done differently here to make it better? And so that person will not feel as if they're downtrodden when you give them the feedback. Because so many times people that are giving feedback, especially teachers to a child, they don't stroke them first so that they can have that positive feeling and feel, well, okay, I did something good, now I can develop. When I was at school, I never thought that I would be able to write anything like a book, because my English teacher told me that I couldn't write properly. And when I got my book back from the teacher with the composition that I wrote, it was The Commercialization of Christmas. I'll never forget. She looked at me and she said, this is nonsense. Well, it was nonsense to her, but it was the truth, because there were people who were going to church Christmas Day and only had their pretty hat played. Their heart wasn't there. It's the same thing as Easter. You have some people, they only come certain times of year. And because I wrote that as a child and it may have affected her, she gave me a bad grade. Now, I had a spirit of a fighter. So what I did, when I got a little older, I went and I did London GC English. And it came back. Distinction. Oh, my gosh. You know how I felt? Distinction in English language. Now, the teachers... criticism would have kept me down if I did not have that spirit of getting up
mm-hmm.
and doing it. And not all children are like that. And some don't come home and tell their parents. I go home and tell my parents everything that happened to me at school, because it's important to have that connection and they could help me. So this is where I say it's how you say things that matter. Words matter. And not only the words, but the tonality. So important. Would you agree with me?
Of course. Of course. And but as children, how many of us heard this? This is a program. This is a tape. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Well, that was a lie.
Yeah.
That was a big lie. Big fat lie.
Yeah. Sometimes the words hurt you more than sticks and stones.
That yep. is correct.
Because they live with you. Because I am living with that woman telling me I didn't write properly until I got that certification from London GC that was good. That sort of pushed me up. And then I remember in corporate America, since I've been here, I wrote something about the pharmaceuticals in the marketplace. And I remember the boss said to me, oh, Joni, you didn't write this. This doesn't sound like you. And I think most of us will write better than how we speak, because we have the time to write and then edit. And mm-hmm. I was blown away. I still have to send this guy. I'm still alive. I'm going to send him a book.
Yes.
That's perfect.
No, he would have stopped me too, because I'll tell you, the book really came into being for my grandchildren. It wasn't for the public. And my neighbor, you know, I showed her because she's a friend of mine and a good neighbor. And she says, I need one copy of this. I don't think you should just have it for the grandchildren. I need this for my grandchildren. Why don't you do it for everybody? And that, I sat on that for a while. And then Robbie Marder, who is another mentor of mine, she said, so when are you writing the book? Get on with it. Do it. And I met a friend now. Her name is Patty Cotton. And Patty said to me, write the darn book. I had all these people pushing me. I think Cheryl was one of them too that tells me to get it done, Joni, get it done. So
I was just going to say I better get a mention because I was calling up Joni and saying, okay, have you got those notes off your phone yet and under the laptop?
The book was written on my phone because I have carpal tunnel in both hands. And I would just talk to the phone, and most of the chapters are still in there. Still in the phone.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
well, I had a teacher
who wants to write a book, they can write a
they
book.
They can do
really,
it.
Yeah, you have the power to write your own story, and nobody can tell you that it's wrong because it's your story.
Right. Well, I had a teacher once tell me that I wouldn't amount to anything.
Oh, my goodness.
Nice. Oh, no. Nice.
So do you know what I did?
And look at you now.
Mm. Well, I became a teacher.
Yes.
I thank her every day because maybe if she had said that to me, I thought, you know what? I'll show you.
Yes,
and
that was my attitude, Lori.
Yeah, thank you. It's not the people who, you know, think I'm fantastic. I mean, I don't mean this to be disrespectful in any way, but along the way, it's been the people who have come up against me that have been the greatest gifts because the challenges forced me to go down inside and dig out qualities that I didn't even know were there and would not have known they were there if I had not been faced with that. So I welcome the obstacles and the challenges because I know that wrapped around every single one of them is a gift. But one time it took me years to find the gift. Now I find the gift like in 30 seconds.
Because now you can recognize it. You recognize it.
Yes. Okay, what's the gift in this? Yeah. Well, those are beautiful words of encouragement. And I'm going to do a lot of writing this year. We're looking forward to having 5 books on the shelf by the end of 2021. And I've been writing for years. It's just not in book format, but I have all the goodies. So, yes, we're going to do 5 books.
Okay, yes. Joni, you and I are going to be calling Lori up and saying, you got that book written yet?
I'll need my cheerleaders. Yes.
And Lori, so, the thing about it that we have to do is we really have to put it in book form for whoever wants to read it. We don't think that everybody will be reading our book, but for whoever needs it, we need to pass this baton down to the younger generation because we will be leaving soon, one day. We're not ready to go anywhere now, but when we leave, we will leave a legacy in the form of inspiration, wisdom, motivation, whatever you want to tag it.
Mm-hmm.
But it will be stuff for people who are hopeless, people who are in a quagmire of just sickness because we show people how to elevate yourself. You sit there and you worry all the time and you worry and you get yourself sick. So we're there to inspire people to lift yourself up. Today is just another day. Tomorrow could be different if you allow it to be different, which means that they have to change their mindset. And how can you change your mindset if you have no one to tell you? Because we all need mentors. But if they're not having the mentors, then the books will be there to mentor them.
That is correct.
Yes.
Good thing.
When I was 12, my dad handed me a copy. This would be in 1962. A copy of Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. That's when I read it today, it's very intellectual and it's kind of out of date, but I'm 12 and it's hard covered and it's thick. And he said, here, read this. he did, and I'm grateful. And he autographed. I still have it. It's sitting on my shelf here in the office. And I thought, that's the day that seed got planted, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
So how did you two girls meet?
Well, Joan is the director of GSFE, which is Global Society for Female Entrepreneurs in the city of Riverside and Hemet. And one of my friends told me that they have someone for me to meet, her roots are from Jamaica. And mm-hmm. I said, well, I've got to meet her. So we connected and we met at a little, actually it was in Moreno Valley. We met
at that hot dog place.
Yes, and we mm-hmm. sat there and we wouldn't leave each other because we had so much in common.
Wow.
And that's how we met. We had similar things, you know,
mm-hmm.
similar values.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking about value, I noticed, Lori, today that you were now in so many countries. And I was tickled. I said, oh, my, this lady has been adding value to people. Because there's no way you can make a global impact if you weren't offering value.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to sit and listen to a show for an hour if they don't get anything out of it. And with the mentality of what's in it for me, then you've touched a lot of lives, Lori.
Oh.
In your lifetime. You'd be very honored. And today, I'm very honored that it's your anniversary, that you're able to talk with me. You make time for me. And this is also touching because you could be somewhere else doing something else. But here it is. You're impacting my life. You're impacting Sherry's life and anybody else who will listen to us, that she's
right.
selfish, you know? And people mm-hmm. don't have, a lot of people don't have any values these days. They don't know what it is to be committed. They don't know what it is to have honesty and integrity in their lives. And so we have to keep leaving these messages out there, you know, one of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about mm-hmm. compassion, I'd like to add that the book that I'm having out there, The Run for Freedom, there's a bit of compassion that came to me. The person who edited that book was Laurie Robb. And
mm-hmm.
to write a book, it can be very expensive. I didn't have money to do it. And Laurie decided to edit me at a cost that would be less than what probably she would offer to someone else that would be able to do it. And the book cover, Angela Cavani, she was the one who made that beautiful for me. And how did she do that? I told her when I was leaving Jamaica and I looked down, the Atlantic waters are much different from Pacific waters. They're blue, very cold
yes.
blue. And
yes.
so that is exactly how that came into being. And then we have corals and a lot of pretty colors in the water. And she just seems to have all of that on the book cover. So I got a little compassion there from those two people. Talking to Laurie, I realized that she was helping an orphanage in Malawi, Africa. It's called the Helping Hand Orphanage. And so I said, well, I would like to give back proceeds to that. I'll do partial proceeds for them, you know. And she said, but mm-hmm. you don't have to. And I said, but I do, because I always said that if I won the lottery, I still would be where I am because I would be giving that money to the people that have no voice. These little kids did not ask to be here. They're hungry. They're taking food from the dungle. They are in need. Right now, I got verbiage from the person who runs the orphanage, Hastings, that their food, they're lacking food now. The
mm-hmm.
land is dried up. They need to have an irrigation system so that they can water those plants and help to feed themselves. You know, so the
mm-hmm.
orphanage has probably about 315 kids or thereabout, and they have some elderly people in there. They all help each other to survive. So right now the proceeds, our partial proceeds, are going to go to them. And we always say, oh, we're always sending everything back to us. But, well, my grand or ancestors came from Africa. And so I donate back to Africa. And I would also donate some to the Boys and Girls Club in Menifee, California, where I reside. So I do fundraising for people that have no voice, or in the case of the elderly, they've lost their voice. And if I don't do it, then why should I see the need and not do it? I would not be a Christian if I don't do something. So I'm asking whoever will hear my voice that they can reach these little children and support them. Their website, I think, is www.supportHHO.com. Or they can buy my book from Amazon.com and know that the proceeds will be going back to them.
Awesome.
That's part of compassion for me.
Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I did one of my morning lives on your book, Joni.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see it?
I didn't do that this morning. Did you do it this morning?
No, it's like 3 days ago. I tagged you
in
it, so you'll have to go back and look for it.
I have to go and look at it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I think I saw it because I got something coming in from a friend saying that she was reading the book right when you were asking her if she read the book. I think I saw it. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whatever we can.
I'm excited about it. Sorry, I'm very excited about it because it took so long to come to fruition. It's from 2013. I wanted to just compile that, and because, like I told you, I have carpal tunnel in both hands, it was a deterrent for me to really sit there and do stuff. And also the fact that I wanted to find someone who would publish it for me, and realize, well, you can do it yourself. So.
By the way, I'd like. Sorry, go ahead, Laurie.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that I wanted to point that out about Joni, too. You know, she was talking about having carpal tunnel in both hands and so forth. But I've always, from the time I met Joan, been aware of the fact that she always finds a way to do things. You know, it's like, okay, I have carpal tunnel, I can't write or type very well, so I guess I'll just put on, you know, my voice notes and speak my book. And I try to remember that and put that into practice, because I very much tend to be the person who is like, well, I can't do this, so I guess I'm stuck. So that's very inspirational.
Thank you, Shira.
And it's always helpful to have third party promotion. It's very difficult for us to sometimes promote ourselves, but if we have a fan club and other people who can promote for us by giving testimonials, accolades, whatever it is, that is a huge support.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I will be able to ask for funds for people, but I can't ask for myself, Laurie.
I know, girl. I hear you. Yeah. Now I'm going to share a little something with you ladies that you might not know, but there's a big connection with us three women. I'm from the East Coast, Canada, in a province called Nova Scotia. We're just north of Maine. So if you know where the state of Maine is, and you go across the border into Canada, that's the neck of the woods that I'm from. But in Nova Scotia, approximately 40%, this was a statistic some years ago, it may be different now, but 40% of Canada's black population lives in Nova Scotia.
Oh, wow.
And we're very small. Yeah, very small. But we have five different cultures of people, black people there. They didn't all come from Africa, but you see, Halifax, like New York, is a port. And so they brought them in on the ships there because the Halifax Harbor and the New York Harbor don't freeze in the wintertime. So big boats can get in there. And so ships came in. And my first 6 years of teaching school was in a 100% Black community called East Preston. And East Preston was named after Robert Preston, who came in on a ship. And at the end of the day, when they weren't sold, he and several other people, they threw them into the woods, hoping they'd freeze and not survive the winter. And they survived the winter.
Wow.
And now there's this big, beautiful community, which is where I spent my first 6 years teaching. And we have a huge hit. There's a lot of, we have a big Black cultural center where historically everything has been recorded. And a lot of people who've come to other parts of Canada came from there. And it's like back in the day when the Europeans came, they either landed in New York or Halifax. So we're rich in Black history. And so I've always recognized how special that is to have been in that environment, in my world.
That's great.
I did not have a clue that you knew anybody like us.
Oh, my dear, listen. This is a bit of a funny story, but I don't want to take up your time, Joan. But my first day in the school, it was this little wooden schoolhouse. And my first day there, I looked around. I was 21, green behind the ears. I looked around, and there were quite a few Black teachers. There were a couple of East Indian ladies. And I thought, and a couple of white women as well. And I thought, well, somebody in here has got to be young like me. And I looked around and I saw this woman sitting behind me. Her name was Florence Smith. So during coffee, I went up to her and I thought, oh, there's a young person. This is probably her first year. So I went over to her and I said, oh, I'm so excited to have another young person here. Everybody seems so much older. And she looked at me and she said, well, how old do you think I am? And I said, oh, probably 20. No. I've been teaching for 18 years.
Whoa.
And her skin was so beautiful. And I said, what? Anyway, it turns out she was older than my own mom. So she and I became friends. And to this day,
wow,
she's now in her late 80s. And we have been friends all these years. And she taught me the ropes. And along with some other women. So, yes, no, I had a beautiful, I was there for 6 years.
Yeah.
You don't know about people, do you, until you know what you know, what you don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Joan, it's your
That's
time
great.
Here. So, we have about 15 minutes or so left. So, what are we going to talk about, ladies? May I ask a question?
Sure.
What is your perspective on how things are right now for you all in California and COVID and what's going on? It's a year later and we're still all in it here. So what about you?
COVID is a miserable microscopic virus that has created such havoc in society. And when I say havoc, I'm talking about disruption of friends, disruption of businesses, and mental illness has crept in to some people. The children are propped up, boxed up, and they're miserable. Some don't want to see Zoom anymore. So I have a friend who is a psychologist, and she's been telling me that the children are suffering more than any body is with depression and thoughts of suicide. That's that's the very bad side of COVID. Now, on the good side of COVID, because I always have to look for something that's good, it brings out the creativity in people, because when we can't do something, we have to think about alternate, because we all have to eat, we all have to have money to survive. So it brings out, from problems, we get solutions. Yeah, they're people who were never salespeople, and all of a sudden they're selling stuff online. Online works for a lot of people because they don't like rejection. A lot of salespeople fear rejection. So when a product is online, it's just an easier sale for them. So that's worked out great for some people. What I really feel pity for, or I shouldn't use the word pity, but compassion for, is the people who have to pay rent and they don't have the money for rent. They don't have the money for food. And everybody's sort of holding on to their money, because I remember putting out a GoFundMe for a family that they had COVID. And all I got back from it was $145. And with that, I'm saying probably I didn't advertise good enough. But people are holding on to what they have because you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. That's the bad negative part of it. For me, I went ahead and I took the vaccine. I got the Pfizer vaccine. And I'm going back for my second shot in the first week of March. I am encouraging people to go ahead and take the vaccine, because the worst part of it is you would have anaphylactic reaction, and they monitor you there. Then you have to sit for them to monitor you. And I think it's better to take the vaccine and be alive than to wait and be dead. Because I know somebody I know several people that are dead. But the last, I would say 3 weeks, I've heard of people who were in the hospital, but who were at home, some were on oxygen, and some just dead. But also I've heard of people who survived. So we don't know. Your immune system matters, and I would encourage Cheryl to speak on this, because she is a person who has products that deal with the immune system. I do too, but the people who have a strong immune system seem to be better off. What do you think, Cheryl?
Just before we do that, Cheryl, just before we do that, we have another caller. I'm going to see who it is. Yeah. And the other day I had I had to hang up on this caller because they were racist and abusive, and I had to hang them up. So just let me see who this is, and we'll get back to you, Cheryl. Hold that thought, Cheryl. Good morning. Good morning. How are you? We have a guest. May I ask who you are? Okay, no answer. So back to you, Cheryl. Let's have just a quick blurb on the importance of healthy immune system. Over to you.
Okay, thanks. I think rather than even saying protecting your immune system, I think I like to phrase it as living as healthy a life as possible. You know, the immune system is part of it, but some of the things Joni was saying about fear and worry and things like that are a huge part of that also. I think as we're working our way through this, we have to find some mental, emotional, spiritual support that's going to help us have confidence in the future. I feel very strongly about people who kind of who give the thing of, oh my gosh, you know, the whole world is going to wherever in a handbasket, and we're going to destroy the world pretty soon and so forth. Well, first of all, I don't believe that that's true. But secondly, even if it were, guess what? It is not helpful to wake up every morning and function from that position.
True.
You know, that the whole idea of the self-fulfilling prophecy is real. And the last thing you need is to create an atmosphere in which this kind of despair takes root. Joni mentioned people wanting to commit suicide, and as you said, especially the younger generation, it makes me crazy as I see this kind of trend of people, especially people who have influence, speaking like this. Because our young people, we have lived long enough to know that even some of the most disastrous looking things they pass, like Joni, you started your book talking about the 1944 hurricane.
Yeah.
You know, you look around after something like that happens and you think, oh my gosh, the world has come to an end. We're destroyed. How can we live after this? But like you pointed out, things grow, things begin to develop again. Some of the most fragile things, like the banana trees, were the ones that came back first and began to produce. And now I don't hear enough of our voices saying that, because young people, children, they don't know that they haven't lived long enough to have a crisis come and pass and be able to look back and say, oh, wow, I thought that was the end of the world, and look, we survived it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are totally
responsible.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so people like you, Laurie, who are having a show like this where you're talking to people who are positive, are such a benefit to the culture right now.
So I'm grateful. I'm grateful to you, Laurie. Yeah, that's grateful to Laurie, because it's taking the negative aspect and spinning it to let you realize that you can have positivity. And we all need that connection with people. And this is where we feel like the world is going, because you don't get to hug someone. You can use your Skype and your FaceTime and all the different platforms out there. But what is really lacking is the love. It's the love, the peace, the harmony, the touch. That is really what is lacking. And so when we keep experiencing these things that we took for granted, now we get a halt, a pause button on it. And when we get back without COVID, we will appreciate each other better. We won't take so much for granted.
Absolutely. Well, I believe, Cheryl, you have signed up for my... I'm doing a complimentary workshop on Sunday. I don't use the word suicide. I use the word staying alive.
That's better.
So right. I can't stand the word suicide prevention. It drives me crazy. Because we talked earlier about our language, right? It can give that energy. So I'm going to share 40 reasons to stay alive.
I love the title. The minute I heard the title, I thought, okay, I gotta attend that workshop. That is good. So,
all right, yeah. Well, we still have a little time here, ladies. I feel right now. I feel like I'm on The View. I was thinking about doing a show once a week where we'd have a panel, just like The View, and we just talk.
That would be wonderful.
I think we should do that.
That would be wonderful. We should, because I found that this was very nice having Cheryl on, you know, and this would be, it's like a clubhouse, for heaven's sake. The clubhouse, they go on and they have so many 6,000 people listening, but nobody gets too much of a chance because the timing is too small for 6,000 people. And it's a new platform.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, but I'm looking forward to learning more about that. I wanted to share a little bit about relationship before we close, Laurie. And the reason that I would like to do that is if I did not have the relationship built with Dr. Grant, who told me to come over to California, I would not have been put on to the corporate America pharmaceutical company, because I work with Big Pharma. And I would not have had that job. What he did was just, he told me that there's a vacancy and you should apply. So although someone can lead you to the door, you still have to perform to get through that door.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that room, you have to perform to stay in that room. So a lot of people believe, okay, I know Joe Brooks, they can get me something. That is great. That's a foot in the door. But when you go in, you have to produce, or else you're kicked right back through that door. So relationships matter, and in my book, I have 26 building blocks on page 46 of from A to Z, from words that can help to build relationships. And I would just like to quote a little, if I may read just a little. It says,
absolutely.
A is authentic. Be authentic. Be yourself. Oscar Wilde says, everyone else is taken. Be bold. Don't go for the easy way and talk to the person who you already know. Be bold and go and look for someone that you don't really know. C, you should be caring. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. So let someone else give you the accolades or the shout outs. And thank you for that, Cheryl. And D, be dependable. Someone that under promises but over delivers. E, be enthusiastic to life. Show some positive energy. F, follow your gut. G, give. You give referrals to others. You be a connector of people, and you will be very much appreciated. H, help. It's easier for you to help someone. Look for opportunities to help people. I, integrity. Let your word be your unwritten contract. J, be joyful. K, be kind. It's better to be kind than haughty. L, when you find a friend, be a loyal friend. It's much better than the pocket change. Yes, money matters, that's M, but you don't have to rush and push your product to everybody you meet. N, there's a time for everything. And now may not be the right time when you're introducing your product. Come back again. Don't choke that person. Then O, find the interest that you can share with someone new, like myself and Cheryl. Oh, she was from Jamaica. That was great. Then we started talking. Be passionate.
Yeah.
Passionate and show your passion. Q, be quiet sometimes. Learn to listen to the other person's needs. Race, stay in the race. It's not only for the swift. Just don't quit. S, satisfaction. Make your prospect satisfied. T, trust. If you lose this, you're literally done. You may never be able to rebuild it, so be trustworthy. And you, never underestimate someone because of their appearance, the clothing, or how they speak. You may be leaving a lot of money on the table or connections on the table. V, victory. Celebrate the victories. Small wins, they should be big wins in the long term, you know, so celebrate your little victory. Win, you should desire to have a win-win relationship with whomever you choose to do business with. You should be able to help each other grow and achieve your dreams and understand each other. Now with X, I have two X's, which remove the I am from the word impossible, making everything possible. And yes, together we can achieve more. So Lori, we can have these sessions where we have like-minded people come in and inspire other people. And zero, we have no tolerance for cheating and lying. And those are 26 building blocks to build a great relationship.
Well, thank you so much, ladies. We are on the very back end of the show here. I just want to thank you for that list. That's amazing. The book, Run for Freedom, Amazon.com. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Lori Davis. You've been listening to the Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Bye, ladies. We got to go. We got like 50
Bye-bye.
Seconds left.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye. You too.
Hello. Bye-bye, Joni.
Bye-bye.